Yes, I love it.
Sweet, he's giving me 300 boxes of grape nuts flakes.
Friends anybody ever had. And it's funny, but I feel as if I've known you all the time.
I love music, good music, but not swing. I sing.
Hi, and welcome to the Movie Magic Podcast. Each week, we will dive into a certain star and talk to some people who know much about him. I'm Kate, your host, and welcome to the Movie Magic Podcast. Hope you enjoy it. Hi, and welcome to the Movie Magic Podcast. On today's episode, we will be discussing Linda Darnell. And today, we will be talking to Veronica Kane, a researcher on Linda Darnell. I hope you enjoy the episode. Veronica, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, this is going to be so exciting. Are you ready to talk all things Linda Darnell?
You know it. I'm so excited.
For those of you who don't know, Veronica is our Linda Darnell expert. She runs an Instagram account called Linda Darnell's. Her Twitter ad is also Linda Darnell's as well. So she is all about Miss Darnell, and we could not be more happier that she is.
Oh, thank you.
I love Linda. She is probably one of the most underrated, most talented actresses that ever graced the planet.
Yes, 100%. Yeah.
So, if you would like to tell us all that you know about Linda, because you know a lot more than I do.
Sure thing.
So, let's start off when and where she was born.
Alrighty. Well, Linda was born on October 16th, 1923, in Dallas, Texas. She was born as Monetta Eloise Darnell, which is a very unusual name, but that was who she was born as. She was born to Pearl, which was a nickname, Margaret Pearl Darnell, and Roy Darnell. Mm-hmm. She was the second child in the family, her older sister, Undine, then her two younger siblings, Monty and Cal. So I kind of wanted to I know that we're going to talk about her childhood.
Yes.
So I kind of wanted to go into a little bit about her mother's history, especially
because
her mother.
Please.
Yeah. Her mother was born in Clifton, Tennessee. She was a very exuberant, very vivacious young girl. She was really involved in, she was just really a wild child. She loved especially the theater. She really wanted to become an actress ever since she was a kid. Her dad was a musician and a circus performer, so he really supported her. And he died when she was really young, but she still really wanted to become an actress, and so after he died, she became very rambunctious. Her attitude is very she was not doing too hot. So she married, she met this man named Lawrence Kitro, who came, he was in his 30s, and she was 14.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and they married when she was 14 years old. So her chances of becoming an actress were just down the drain. Yeah, but he was not really the most supportive guy in the world. Apparently, he was involved in some dirty laundry and was rumored of killing a man, and he was on a run a lot.
Oh.
And so he left Pearl when she was really young, and she basically had to live with her parents with her now two children with him, and she had to basically leave her children with her mother and had to go find work for herself. But she was so possessive of these kids that she took them with her, but she couldn't take care of them all the time, so she left them with an orphanage eventually. They were adopted, and Pearl was freaking out, so she went and tracked them down. But in the meantime, after her husband left and after her kids were adopted, she met who would be her second husband, Roy Darnell, who was a postman at the time, and he would be for the rest of, until he, retired at, later on, but he was a postman. He was very soft-spoken, very gentle, and they met after Pearl herself had moved to Texas. I forgot to mention that. She had moved to Texas after her kids were gone and to find work, and she met Roy. They married in 1915, And 3 years later, they had their first kid, Undine. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, she didn't do this with her first kids. I think she was just kind of, like, too busy trying to, like, take care of them, especially with her absent husband. But with Undine, she decided it'd be a good idea to try to put her dreams of being an actress onto her daughter. So she started putting her in, like, started to give her dance lessons and elocution lessons and wanted her to become an actress. And at this point, Hollywood was popping, so she wanted her to become a Hollywood actress. And Undine was not very good at it. She didn't like doing it. She's very shy, very quiet, and just did not like performing. And so she had to give up on that dream with her first daughter. But 5 years later, she was blessed with her second daughter, who we now know as Linda.
Mm-hmm.
And she projected her dreams onto her and tried it out with Monetta at the time. And it was kind of like she did really well. I mean, Monetta was really involved. She kind of like had, like, her mother pushed her so much that it became Monetta's dream to become a Hollywood actress too. So she would go and perform as she got older, and during her childhood she would take dance lessons, music lessons, she did pageants, and she eventually started going into modeling and talent shows. And you know, she did this for most of her childhood and early teenage years. And when, so that was basically her childhood, and then we could go into when she gets discovered, but
please.
Yeah, but that was basically her childhood.
Okay, so it was basically her mom's idea for her to be an actress, basically. So it wasn't Linda's initial idea at all. It was just basically her mom's failed dream. So basically her mom was a stage mom.
Oh yeah. Yes, and she would be like that for the rest of Linda's life, essentially.
Oh my God.
Yeah, she was a wild woman, and her and Linda had an interesting relationship. I mean, Linda cared for her mother and loved her mother, but she had some resentment towards her, especially because she basically pushed her into becoming something that she didn't really initially, like, she didn't really have a say in what she was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And Pearl basically just pushed her. But, like, while Linda was being pushed into becoming an actress, she also kind of had a semi-normal childhood. I mean, she was a very shy, introverted kid, but she loved playing, and she had a huge affination for animals. Like, she, they grew up with all kinds of animals at the house. She had a pet bunny that she would carry with her everywhere. They had turtles, they had an Irish setter, they had, birds that lived with them, and then they had this iconic rooster named Weedy, who her dad had brought home one day as an Easter gift, and mm-hmm. he basically just became, like, the prince of the household. I mean, he ate table food with them, he had his own little, like, bed mm-hmm. in their house, but yeah, Weedy was kind of, like, one of their, like, prized animals, but she was a huge animal lover. She actually did get somewhat of a high school education. I mean, she went to Sunset High School in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get into that more, like, because she gets discovered and then goes back home and gets discovered and then goes back to Hollywood again. It's a long story. But,
yes, please. We have the time.
Yeah. So I guess going into how she was discovered and how she got into Hollywood. So in 1937, 20th Century Fox talent scout Adam Kahn was coming to the South to look for new talent, and he had announced in all the newspapers, especially when he came to Dallas and Fort Worth,
mm-hmm.
That he was looking for a new talent and to make an appointment with him at his hotel suite. And Pearl found the ads, and she was like, we're going to take Monetta to see him, because obviously this is going to be like a potential break for her.
Mm-hmm.
So they met him at his hotel suite. She got all gussied up and gave him some modeling shots that she had, and like she showed off as much as she could. Ivan immediately like saw something in her, but she was only 14 at this time. He thought she was like 18, so mm-hmm. he was already like figuring out like, hey, maybe we can do something with her. So after the appointment, they went back to their home and, like, waited for Ivan Khan to say something. He finally wrote back to them and said, hey, we actually kind of want her to come to Hollywood. You know, all expenses paid, we'll see her there and we'll test her out. Mm-hmm. So they packed up their things, Pearl and Bonetta, along with Weedy, and mm-hmm. they went to Hollywood. And they basically went through, like, 2 weeks of, like, grooming, essentially. So Linda took a test. She got some new modeling shots. They did her hair. They changed her face. I mean, she was...
They probably changed her name.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, they were thinking about, like, her as, like, a potential person, but, like, they were looking at her physically, and they were saying, like, Linda is, like, kind of grimy. I mean, she bit her nails a lot. She had a really, like, broad smile. They were kind of trying to make her look like a potential, like, Hollywood actress, and so they wanted to appeal to the heads at 20th Century Fox. So, like, for 2 weeks, they tried to change her accent because she had a really thick Texas accent.
Oh, yeah.
And they changed her appearance, and they took a bunch of pictures, they took a test, and the heads of 20th Century Fox were curious, and they, for about a week after, they were waiting in Hollywood to see what 20th Century Fox would say. And while they were looking at her, they found out that she was only 14, and they said that, we would love to have you, but you are just too young, and we can't have you right now. So we're going to ask that you go home. We're going to keep an eye on you, but we're asking you to go home and wait a little bit. And Linda was, of course, crushed, but, like, there was still hope that she would go back. And she went back to a semi-normal life. I mean, she went to high school. Everyone, like, all of her friends, all of her classmates were so excited, like, oh my gosh, she went to Hollywood, like, what's it like? And, like, she would tell them about all these different things. Like, apparently during those 2 weeks, they taught her how to kiss on camera and everything. Like, mm-hmm. they basically just, she kind of, like, was really popular at her school and in her community.
She seemed like it. She, just looking at her, you could tell that she was somewhat life of the party.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny because, like, Linda was not really much of a party person. She was very introverted and mm-hmm. didn't really like going into big social settings. But, like, because, you know, their own Monetta went to Hollywood and stayed there for a few weeks. And, like, it was a huge deal. And she basically kind of, like, was really popular. But in the meantime, Pearl and Monetta and the family kept in close contact with Ivan. And mm-hmm. Ivan Khan basically came, like, their like advisor in terms of like what to do in the meantime. So Pearl put her in more modeling gigs, more talent shows, and eventually they put her in this series called Gateway to Hollywood, which is a really big deal for like up and coming discoveries mm-hmm. around the country. And Linda won for the Dallas like winners. Like they basically got a boy and a girl from mm-hmm. each big city. And she won for Dallas, and so they went to, and then they basically would compete in, like, different, like, levels. And with these competitions, they would do, like, film tests, and they would basically show off any talent that they had in order to appeal to Hollywood studios. And 20th Century Fox was keeping an eye on her still, and then eventually other studios like Paramount and RKO were also taking a note on her, especially with this new... like talent show that she was doing, the Gateway to Hollywood, mm-hmm. and they were planning on doing something with her too. But 20th Century still had that contact with her, but they didn't want to say anything. They didn't want to be like, we have Linda, don't touch her. They were basically trying to get Linda for themselves. It was basically just like a battle of like who was going to get Linda at this point. And basically by the end of this, 20th Century and RKO were both giving her an option of coming to their studio. 20th Century Fox had offered her a role because Daryl Zanuck saw her test and were like, she could be a good person in this role. He offered her a role in her eventual first movie, Hotel for Women, but at this point she hadn't known yet. And then RKO was giving her an option. And from what I understand, 20th Century Fox and Ivan Khan especially were basically telling her, don't say anything about this, but you're basically going to like be with us. Like, Pearl was basically, like, gravitating more towards 20th century, I think mainly because they offered her a solid option, like to be in a starring role as opposed to RKO that didn't really have anything.
Yeah, RKO just wanted her. If 20th Century Fox literally had a solid and said, you know what, we want her. We want her now, even though she's 14 years old, we still want her.
Yeah, and because of that, they basically kind of made the decision to go with 20th Century Fox, but Ivan said not to say anything yet because it was still kind of like a hush-hush kind of thing because RKO still had the option out for her.
Yeah.
But Pearl kind of jumped the gun a little bit and said that, and basically put out in the local paper that Linda was going to be signed to some major studio.
Oh, God.
But Pearl was too excited, and Ivan was so mad. And so he was like, all right, we're taking you back to Hollywood, but don't say anything else. We cannot let other papers get to you, because if you let local papers get to this first, then it'll make our publicity department look bad, because they wanted to be the ones to announce that, hey, we got a new star.
Yeah, so we got an upcoming star, Linda Darnell, so...
Yeah, so they kept it hush-hush. Finally, the option for Marquio expired, and Linda was officially signed the 20th, and then they made the announcement. So it was kind of like a big production to get her into Hollywood, but like once she made that contract with the 20th Century Fox, she basically became their puppet. Like, she was basically their
property.
Prize, their property, exactly.
Man, so. And I can imagine Daryl Zanuck, because Daryl Zanuck was not an easy man to please at all.
He was one
of the hardest. Him, besides him and Louis B. Mayer and Carl Laemmle at Universal, those men were the hardest people to please. So Linda must have had something really special to catch his eye, because it was between her and Jean Crane, who were young at the time. They were signed to 20th Century Fox when they were in their teens.
Yeah.
And you could, and when you're looking at her first few movies, you're like, oh, wow, she's like 18. No, the kid's like 14, 15 years old. Are you kidding?
Yeah,
she's amazing. She doesn't look, she doesn't look like it. She doesn't look like she's 13, 14 years old, but believe me, she is.
Yeah, and they banked off of that, like, because she looked so much older, they used that to their advantage. I mean, they cast her in a wife role. There's a second movie in Hollywood she played a wife, like, and she was only 15. So, like, the fact that they could use her for so many different things, and essentially, since she was so young and so naive, they basically just molded her into this ingenue type. They could make her do anything because she basically sold herself to that studio, and they basically controlled almost every aspect of her life, her personal life, like her relationships, what movies she couldn't do. You know, and that lasted for several years. But,
oh, yeah. God. Yeah, I heard 20th Century Fox was a hard studio to work at.
It was
harder than MGM, because Zanuck had, if you turned down a movie from Zanuck, you were basically suspended for like a year without pay.
There's actually a great story about that I could get into.
Please.
By this point, Linda had been making several films with 20th Century. She was casting a lot of ingenue or wife roles, very much put in a little typecast box. And by 1942-43, Linda was kind of getting a little fed up. Her mother not only was, on one hand, her mother was trying to control every aspect of her life, and then 20th Century Fox was also trying to control it, which... Because 20th Century Fox was the major studio and Pearl was just her mother, they basically were not letting Pearl in on anything. I mean, it got to the point where whenever Pearl would go on set, because she would go on set a lot and cause a scene a lot, they actually had to ban Pearl off of the set because Pearl was just getting too much. And because she kept losing the grip on her daughter, she became more and more, like, angry that she couldn't control her daughter anymore. Like, she couldn't push her daughter to do anything. That was all on 20th Century Fox. But Linda was kind of, like, I think, well, she was put in a lot of publicity relationships. I mean, she was put in relationships by 20th Century Fox with the likes of, like, Mickey Rooney and another guy named Robert Shaw. He didn't really do much, but, like, people like that. She was put in a lot of publicity relationships. They didn't really, like, do anything for her. I mean, she, like, was friendly to them, but she didn't really, like, actually hit anything off with them.
No, because I know I've seen a lot of pictures with her and Mickey Rooney, and, you know, there's been a lot of publicity about, like, her going out with Mickey and her having dates, but in reality, she wanted nothing to do with him.
Yeah, and they
she couldn't stand him.
Yeah, she couldn't stand it. She didn't really like any of the men that she went out with, that Fox made her go out with. So, back in 1940, when she was making Stardust, which was one of her, which was her third film out in Hollywood, and it was basically a semi-autobiographical film. And that film holds a lot of importance because that was also the film that she was watching on the night of her death, which is really kind of freaky. But on Stardust, she met the cinematographer Pev Marley, who would eventually become her first husband. But
The age difference between that just kind of freaks me out a little bit. I'm just like, Linda, I love you, but what are you doing, sis? Deanna Durbin, who? What is this?
Yeah.
Come on. Come on, Linda.
The fact that Pev, he knew, like, that his, like, love for Linda was weird. I mean, he was attracted to her, like, on that film. Like, he started becoming, like, attracted to her when she was 15.
He
was literally 40 years old. He admitted that, like, yeah, Linda was a little young for me, so I kind of just didn't really
say. No shit, Sherlock!
I was like, that's, you know. So Pev Marley's a pedophile.
But, yes.
You know, that's a whole other thing. But,
I would agree with that notion, believe me, sis. I'm just kind of looking at this going, Linda Darnell, listen, sweetheart. And she'd probably be like, but I love, sweetheart.
Yeah.
Sweetheart. Miss Darnell, you are too, he is too old for you. Mind you, he's like 40. He's like 20 years older than she is. He is a cinematographer. That's great. But the thing is about this marriage is that it makes me so uncomfortable to know that she was like, she saw him as like a father figure, from my understanding. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of like, sis, why would you marry a dude that you would think is your dad? Like, he's old enough to be your dad, first of all.
Yeah.
Why?
I think it mainly just had to do with the fact that because your father, like Roy, was not very involved in her life. I mean, he was not a very good father figure. Not that he was like a bad person or anything. He just wasn't very involved in Linda's life, especially as a kid. It was mostly her mom that, because she controlled everything that Linda did, and her dad was not really involved in her life. So the need for that father figure, I don't think she really knew how to go about that properly. I think she just really needed Pev as a security, and I think the one way to do that was to marry him.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's just, I mean, but, you know, in hindsight, it was just,
It pissed Sanic off tremendously.
And that's kind of, like, where I'm going to go with this. They got married. They eloped, while Pev was on leave. He was in the army at this point, and he was on leave, and they had been dating for a few months, and Linda was, she was 19 years old, she was 19 years old, and she said, Pev, we're going to get married, and he's like, okay, we're doing it. So they went to Las Vegas, and they eloped.
Of course, Las Vegas.
April 13th, 1943, the only person she told, and her only, one of the only witnesses, it was her maid of honor, was Ann Miller. She was her best friend. They'd met in 1941 at, I think it was a war benefit, and they became really close friends, and she was the only person that Linda told about the marriage. Ann Miller came, she witnessed it, she was maid of honor, and then they went back to Ann's house to hold the reception for the wedding, and they invited, like, her family, her, Linda's parents came, her mother was invited, but her mother was absolutely pissed. She was throwing a temper tantrum at home. Like, she was, like, yelling and throwing dishes. I mean, she was so mad at Linda for doing this, because it basically just ruined her Virgil image, and basically ruined her ingenue reputation.
Her child stardom.
Yeah, and Clara Miller, Anne's mom, who was also close friends with Pearl, convinced her to come to the reception and said, you should do this for Linda. She really wants you here. And so she grudgingly came along with Roy. Both of them kind of just like stayed in the corner of the room, didn't talk to anyone. Pearl was not happy. She barely talked to Linda. And obviously another person who wasn't too happy with the marriage was Daryl Zanuck.
Of course.
When he found out,
he was pissed.
So she at this point was already about to work on a musical called The Girls He Left Behind, I think mm-hmm. was the title. Mm-hmm. And when he found out, he took her off of the picture and suspended her for 6 weeks. The magazines put it as, well, he publicized it as their honeymoon, Pat and Linda's honeymoon.
Oh, really, of course.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. But they kind of, like, even, like, some people were suspicious that this is not necessarily, like, a honeymoon. They were suspicious that 20th Century had something to do with this, and they did. And they didn't really even have much of a honeymoon. I mean, Pev went off to war. He only was on furlough for a little bit, and then he left. So Linda was alone for a lot of that time. But she was put on suspension.
Mm-hmm.
And then she came back and was kind of, her reputation was a little damaged because of this.
Mm-hmm.
And she started working on a couple films. Her first film from her suspension, coming back from her suspension, was Song of Bernadette, which is one that she really wanted to do for a long time. But because of what happened, he only put her in a very small cameo role as the Virgin Mary.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
I've seen it.
She was uncredited, and did she have any dialogue? I can't remember.
She had a few lines here and there. Yeah. But it wasn't, and you couldn't really see her either. Like, they made her extremely small.
Yeah, no, she was, like, this little tiny, like, she was basically
a dot
of Bernadette.
She was a dot. She was a dot, basically. And she basically was, like, really small. Like, I've seen The Song of Bernadette. It is fantastic, and it's a beautiful film. Yeah. Believe me, if you're into religion, that's great. If you want to get into Catholicism and all the great saints, sweetie, that's the movie to watch. If you want to watch Jennifer Jones's filmography, sweetie, that's the movie to watch. But for Linda Darnell, she had like this little mini part,
she
and
had
you
a
could
little,
yeah,
little tiny cameo. And apparently, the writer of Song of Bernadette was not too happy with her being the Virgin Mary because of, you know, what had happened and everything.
Yeah.
But you know, Daryl Zanuck didn't credit her. A very small role, physically, like literally a small role. And so that was not really, but I mean, now that people know that Linda was in it, and even back then people knew that Linda was the Virgin Mary, like her sister Undine actually credited it as like, or was it Undine, or was it, it was one of her sisters, it was either Undine or Monty, I can't remember, but one of them commented on how that was like the most beautiful they'd seen Linda. I mean, just like, even though it was like really small, like mm-hmm. she still was like the Virgin Mary. I mean,
yeah,
she had,
but you
like,
can,
the light.
Yeah, you can barely see her though. Like they made her so small. Like you can barely tell it's Linda Darnell. Like I had no idea it was Linda Darnell until somebody told me that was Linda Darnell. And I was like, are you serious? I've seen this movie 1,000 times and it's fabulous, but it's like, oh my God.
I know.
What?
But, I mean,
I would have been pissed.
Yeah. But even after that, she did a couple films. She did one where she played a Native American in Buffalo Bill,
mm-hmm.
which a little problematic, especially considering that their justification for casting her as a Native American was because she had, quote-unquote, a few drops of Cherokee blood in her, in her like genetics, and that was a little problematic. Very small role. Especially coming off of her reputation and her elopement and everything.
Just punishing her at this point.
Yeah, and, you know, Daryl Zanuck was slowly starting to let her back into bigger films. I mean, she was starring in, a very, very low-budget films, like Sweet and Lowdown, which was one with Benny Goodman,
mm-hmm.
you know, very mediocre reviews. But it wasn't until 1944, which is, like, a huge, like turn for Linda's image. She'd been named, like, Look Magazine's, like, one of Look Magazine's most beautiful women, along with, like, Hedy Lamarr and Ingrid Bergman. And she was starting to kind of make a name for herself again. And at this point, she was sent the script to a movie that was eventually called Summer Storm, based on Anton Chekhov's Shooting Party, which is I think it was a novel or a short story, I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
But that role was totally different from anything she'd ever done. She was playing a very femme fatale type role, which would eventually become like her shtick for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, she was really interested in the script, and Daryl Zanuck was a little hesitant, but he eventually signed her to do it. And with that, her image completely turned around. For publicity for that film, she posed in a peasant garb on top of like a pile of hay, which is apparently really hot.
That photo shoot.
Yeah.
Yes, I've seen that photo shoot.
Really hot for some reason, because like Jane Russell did the same thing for her, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And like with Linda, I mean, that picture was featured in Yank magazine, and she was becoming the next like pinup queen, essentially. She was becoming up there with like Betty Grable and everything in terms of like her sexiness. And with that role, she kind of just took off on a different direction, which she was actually really excited about, because Linda was always someone to like challenge herself. She loved doing things that like that she wanted to really further her career as an actress in film, and changing her image was the next step to do that. So she did like some of her most iconic work during this period, which is like Fallen Angel.
Yes, I was gonna say Fallen Angel. The best part of that movie is it Dana Andrews who's in that movie?
Yeah.
Okay, so Dana Andrews comes into this cafe or whatever, and she's just getting ready to work. And he goes, you know, where did you get the watch? And he's like, you get this last night. And I love her line where she goes, wait till we're married and then ask me. So then I don't have to tell you a thing. And I'm like, yes!
I love that movie. Those were my first movies I ever saw of her. And, like, just seeing her in that role was like, wow. Like, the fact that she could pull off that kind of role for years before she'd been playing, like, wives and, you know, young women and mm-hmm. like ingenues, like being able to pull that off so well, it was just like, wow. Like,
yes.
Linda, people have described Linda as not the most talented actress. I mean, for me, I think she's a great actress, obviously.
I do too.
There's some people who think that she's a little subpar, and like with films like that, I mean, I think that her acting chops really showed through, and like she didn't really have much of an opportunity to do stuff like that. Like Summer Storm was like her first time doing something like that, and her co-star, what was her name? She was in The Sound of Music, and I'm totally blanking on her name. I can't remember, but one of her co-stars commented on it in her biography, saying Linda was a sweet girl. She was not the most talented actress, but she was a sweet girl. And I like things like that. I'm just like, oh man, you should have seen what she could do later. But like,
yeah,
that's also just me talking. I'm very biased, so
please, please do, because we need some Linda Darnell fans up here. I'm telling you, this woman deserves more credit than she deserves.
I know, especially especially during this period of time, she was showing like all different kinds of acting chops. I mean, she's doing Fallen Angel, Hangover Square, which is another really good movie, another femme fatale role.
Mm-hmm.
She did My Darling Clementine, which is like one of those iconic Western movies, and she was in it. And
yeah, it's like one of her only Westerns, I believe.
Well, actually, she did, I wouldn't say a lot, but she did do several.
Okay.
Her first like Western movie was Buffalo Bill, but like
it
was
That's right.
Yeah, and then she did like Two Flags West, and her last film was a Western too. She wasn't a big fan of doing Westerns, also because she just didn't like she was allergic to horses, for one thing. And, so
that's a weird allergic allergy to have.
She didn't know that until she did one of her first movies, which is Chad Hanna, and in that movie she has to ride a horse, and she developed allergic reaction to it. So she didn't really like doing Westerns all that much, but she did do a few of them in her career. So she did some of her best work during this period. after her image changed. And, like, you know, one of her most iconic roles that, I mean, unfortunately did not do well at the box office, but it is one of those roles that you just have to see. It's Forever Amber.
Yes. Oh, my God. It's a great movie.
It is great. And, like, you know, I think it's ironic that, like, I recently was, like, looking to see how Forever Amber did, like, review-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, on Rotten Tomatoes, they have, like, a book that they came out with. It was, like, the worst movies that we love or something like that. And it basically just about the worst-rated movies in the history of Rotten Tomatoes, but they loved how bad they are. And Forever Amber is one of them. And that movie, that movie got a 6% on Rotten Tomatoes, which, you know, and even, like, even back then, like, in 1947, I mean, it did not do well at all.
And Zanuck was pissed.
Yeah, and it mainly just, I mean, like, from what I read, it mainly, it just had to do with the censorship issues. I mean, Forever Amber was, like, the number one book of the decade. It had come out in 1945, and it was scandalous. I mean, it was, even for, like, today's standards, like, they talk about some pretty, like, graphic things in terms of, like, sexuality. I mean, Forever Amber was, like, a harlot, essentially. She slept her way up to the top, and the movie, they had to show that, but also they had to cut back a lot of stuff. Like, and they basically butchered that movie. Like, Linda was not happy with how Hollywood treated that, because, like, there was, I mean, when she finished filming, after all the different cuts that were made, they finally released it after they cut out, there's a lot of censorship issues, but one of them was Linda's quote-unquote heaving bosoms, that they had to cut out so much of that footage because of how she looked, because it was so scandalous. And, like, this is, like, 1940s, this is peak, like, censorship, and Linda was just not happy with how it was treated, and, you know, and she kind of predicted that it was going to be bad, and she was right. It just did not do well at all.
No.
And they didn't put so much publicity into it. I mean, the search for Amber was, they were trying to make it out like it, like Gone with the Wind, like when they were searching for Scarlett. I mean, and she wasn't even the first choice. Apparently, Peggy Cummins, who was a newcomer at the time, who would eventually go on to do Gun Crazy, which was a really good movie, but at the time, she was chosen. She had never done films before, and they figured out that she was just too inexperienced to do a role like Forever Amber.
Give it to Linda.
They gave it to Linda, and Linda actually wanted it even before that instance, but when they chose Peggy, of course, she was kind of, you know, heartbroken, or not heartbroken, but she was just kind of annoyed that that happened, but then they dropped Peggy, and then they got Linda, so it was just kind of like, you know, it kind of worked out, but, but that film, she worked her butt off on that movie. She went through insane dieting to the point where she starved herself and had to go to the hospital and had to, basically, like, stop shooting for a few weeks until she regained her health.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and she really put, like, all of her physical energy into that movie, and for such a mediocre turnout, which is very frustrating to think about, and it was very frustrating for Linda to have that happen. But, you know, she would go on to do, 2 years later, she did arguably her best movie. I think it's her best movie, but Blood of the Three Wives.
Yes. Now, let me tell you something about that movie. If anything you want to know about that movie, let me tell you. That movie is one of the best films ever made. And I was talking with somebody about it, actually, because they were like, oh, I really like Jean Crane, and I really like... It's Anne Southern, right?
Yes, Anne Southern, Jean Crane,
In Linda, okay. They were like, oh, you know, Anne Southern and Jean Crane and Linda Darnell. And I was like, yes, a power team. Are you kidding me? Zanuck really put all of his eggs in one basket when he made that movie, because he knew. Because Jean Crane was just coming up.
Mm-hmm.
He had just literally signed Jean Crane, like, not even 3 years before. And because I know Darnell and Crane had been teamed once before in the Centennial Summer, which was really cute.
Yeah.
Or is that after?
No, that was before.
Okay, that was before. That's what I thought. So, you know, so he was like, oh, Crane and Darnell, they look really cute together. So why not put them in a film together? And we'll just throw in Anne Southern. You know, why not? And it's arguably a, oh my god, it's a powerhouse of a movie.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, Mankiewicz won the Oscar for best screenplay for that movie. And it, this is, I mean, according to Ronald L. Davis, who is her biographer, he regards it as her best movie too, which I agree. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think her role was the most nuanced out of the three of them. Mm-hmm. I think there was so much there, and she managed to pull it off really well. Mm-hmm. And you know, her character was probably the most like complex. I mean, this is probably just me talking, but I think she had one of the most complex storylines in that whole movie.
She had the most lines too. I mean, Crane's part wasn't that big. When you look at it, Jean Crane's part was only a section. It wasn't really that big. Darnell really was the main focus.
They went back and forth on Linda's storyline, and it was really, really cool to see Linda, like, have her shining moment that she was mm-hmm. robbed of in Forever and Ever. I mean, she had her shining moment, but it was just not, it wasn't, you know, it's not well known.
Yeah, Forever and Ever is one of those movies that you gotta watch before you die. You just have to see it. It's, for me, I think it's fabulous, but that's because I'm a Linda Darnell fan anyway. So I will like anything that she's in, but when I watched Forever Amber, I was like, okay, Linda, I can see this movie sucks at some point, but it's still a good movie. But when you watch A Letter to the Three Wives, oh girl, you better make sure you better buckle in for that ride.
Yes.
Girl.
That was my first introduction to Linda, and I mean, I just kind of associate that movie with, like, how I fell in love with learning about Linda and how I, like, really just started. I was like, Linda is, like, not only was she, her beauty struck me first, and I was like, man, like, this girl's beautiful. Why doesn't anyone talk about her anymore? I mean, like, she was on the same, like, I mean, she was regarded as one of the most beautiful women in Hollywood. I mean, along with, like, Hedy Lamarr and Rita Hayworth, and, like, you know, this, and she's so, like, underrated, and I think that was just something that immediately struck me. I was like, who is this person? And then eventually it just became more of just like, I want to learn more about this person. And A Letter to Three Wives, I mean, I don't know a whole lot about the production other than this movie was the one that started her affair with Joe Mankiewicz, who mm-hmm. she regarded as the love of her life. And you know, he was married at the time, and she was too. And they started hitting it off right away. He was really friendly to her, and you know, like, and her to him as well. Mm-hmm. And they hit it off really fast. But Joe would not leave his wife for her, mm-hmm. And she, you know, she kind of knew that. She kind of expected this to go down the drain at some point, but mm-hmm. she was so in love with him that she just didn't want to acknowledge it. And this is not her first affair either. She actually had an affair with Howard Hughes, which I think is really interesting.
Howard Hughes.
Yeah, I know. It was, but I mean,
ew.
She was one of those. She was one of them. And she had, you know, a false sense of like, oh, he's going to marry me. But Howard Hughes was never the marrying type.
No, he is so gross.
I know.
He's a gross. The worst part is about it is he's buried in the same cemetery as Jean Tierney.
Yeah.
I've seen his grave, sis. It's not great. God, Howard. He's Linda. Say what?
But it's just when I found out that she was like one of his, like, girlfriends, I was just like, oh god, like, I was just like, of course she did. I mean he had a type. I mean, you think of like Ava Gardner. I mean, that was one of his most famous affairs that he had, and like, you know, it's mm-hmm. just Linda was still like, she was doing really well in Hollywood, but like, she still, like, you know, she had an affair with him, and I think that's just, you know, interesting. But yeah, it wasn't, Joe Mankiewicz wasn't her first affair. But that one she considered him the love of her life, and
he wasn't that cute either.
No, and he didn't really treat her the best. And she put in a lot of time and effort into the relationship, and he didn't talk about Linda very much. I mean, even in his biography, he didn't really, he barely mentioned Linda. She was like, oh, she was a sweet girl, but like, he didn't say hardly anything about the relationship. But Linda loved him, and everyone around her, I think even Kev knew, but like most people knew that she was having an affair with him, and she loved him to death. During the filming, Kev and Linda actually separated for a period of time, but they would come back together.
I think he had a drinking problem, didn't he?
Yes, and he actually was a major influence with her drinking problem because she became an alcoholic. And because of Pev, she started drinking alcohol. I mean, at that point, her mother apparently was very much like, no cigarettes, no drinking, and that stuck until she married Pev, who basically taught her how to smoke and drink, and that became a huge problem for her. She started drinking in 1944, and it got worse and worse and worse as she got older.
Yeah, and I'm sure that affected, as we'll go into, the relationship with her daughter that she had. I bet that impacted it tremendously, because any person who has an alcoholic parent would know. I mean, Mary Astor's daughter will tell you the same thing. Mary Astor's daughter will say, Mom was an alcoholic, it sucked.
Yeah, it definitely really impacted her relationship with her daughter. So to get into how this came about, so Pev and Linda's relationship was not doing too well, but for a few years at that point, they'd been talking about adopting. Linda, unfortunately, was not able to have children. They found out that her reproductive organs were underdeveloped, and she was not able to have children. And that really crushed her, because she really wanted to be a mom. And when they decided in 1948, it was like early 1948, they decided to adopt Lola, who Charlotte Mildred Marley was her full name, but they called her Lola. They didn't actually adopt her officially until later that year, but they had kind of already made the plan to adopt her early on. But the adoption agency they'd been working with, when they found out that Pev and Linda had separated in 1948, they did not like that. I mean, obviously it wouldn't work with separated parents, but so they got back together and adopted Lola. And it was kind of not only an effort to save their marriage, but it was also a way to give Linda some purpose, because she was so excited to have a daughter that she could love and that she could just, like, dress up. And, you know, she had these dreams of becoming this amazing mom. But after 1948, she became more and more estranged from Pev. I mean, their relationship was very rocky. They would flip-flop back and forth between being in love and then being out of love. And, a lot of arguing. They were very stubborn people, and of course, alcoholism didn't help. And in 1950, they officially separated, and then they divorced in 1951. But during this time, Linda was not really involved in Lola as a mom. And you know, when she was very young, she already hired a governess to take care of her, and Linda was just, she was mentally not able to take care of Lola. She was not doing too well. 1949 was when she kind of suffered a really bad bout of depression and suicidal thoughts because of her relationship with Joe, because she knew deep down it wasn't going to work, and she was so crushed, because not only was she kind of getting, her relationship with Pev was getting worse, but her relationship with Joe was also going to end. And she was just not happy, and her mental state did not help her her as a mother. So Lola didn't really see much of her when she was growing up. And Linda tried her hardest, especially like after she left Hollywood and everything, which I can get into that a little bit. She was dropped by 20th Century Fox, along with many other stars at the time. She was dropped by them in 1952 with the increasing competition of television. So they were dropping, they were basically...
They were dropping people left and right. They dropped Gene Crane. They dropped Gene Tierney. They dropped... Oh, God. Because Gene Tierney, I know she had to fight her way through that. They dropped Ann Southern. They dropped Ann Sheridan was Warner Brothers. I'm sorry. They dropped, God, who else did they drop? But I know they dropped Gene Crane around the same time.
Yeah, and, I mean, at this point, Linda was kind of getting fed up with Hollywood, and she was actually relieved to be dropped from 20th Century Fox. I mean, they basically controlled her life so much that it got to the point where she was just tired. She was just tired, she was exhausted, and she was stressed out. And, so, yeah, by that point, she was, she had been talking about potentially going abroad and taking some time off. She'd gone to Europe before for like a mental vacation after Forever Amber was completed. She came back. She didn't have a great time, but she wanted to go back, especially to Italy. She had already been talking with this Italian filmmaker, Giuseppe Amato, who wanted her to come over to Italy and make a picture. And she didn't actually make it until after her contract with 20th Century Fox had ended. Mm-hmm. But she was very looking forward to getting out of Hollywood. And as her, you know, as her mental state grew worse, her alcoholism got worse, and she started getting, like, she was noted by a lot of her friends as becoming a very angry person. Basically, alcohol became her crutch. She would drink all the time. And this is kind of like a trigger warning to anyone who has problems with this, but Linda was not doing very well mentally, and alcohol was becoming more and more of a crutch for her. And and financially she wasn't doing too well either, which kind of gets me into her next marriage, which was to a man named Phil Liebman. He was this mogul, I guess. He was in the beer business.
How ironic.
Yeah, he owned what was the company called? Rheingold Beer. He had come into owning that. His family, I think, was involved in that when he was young, and then he eventually became the owner of that beer company. And so with that, he got a lot of money. And he met Linda, and at this point, Linda's career was not doing too well. But he met her, fell in love with her image, because, I mean, this was Linda Darnell. This was, like a really famous actress in the 40s, so he was really wanting to marry her and basically just, like, have her as arm candy, essentially.
Absolutely. Yeah. Married to Linda Darnell? Please.
Yeah, and he treated her like an object more than anything. Linda was not, this marriage is kind of torn, because I understand why Linda married him, but at the same time, she really shouldn't have. She didn't treat him very well. She, because of her anger issues, she would lash out at him a lot, because she felt like a toy. She felt like she was basically just being paraded around as, you know, as his wife. And he was, you know, he bought her really nice things, jewelry, a house, like cars, and he basically just, like, fluffed her up into this point where she was just, like, his toy that he could, like, his doll, essentially, and Linda hated it. Mm-hmm. And apparently people regard him as a gross person. I mean, he was very, like, he's not a good person. He was just very gross, very slobby, but he was very rich. But, yeah, so Linda just really quickly fell out of any kind of love that she had for him, and for the next few years they divorced. Not long after their marriage, just Linda just was fed up with him, and
for good reason. Yeah. Too, I mean, if you're treated like an object, I mean, I understand where she's coming from. To be married to somebody just because of who they are is a horrible thing. Deanna Durbin had this issue too with Felix Jackson. Jean Crane had this issue with Paul Brinkman. Who else had this issue? Ronald Reagan had this issue with Jane Wyman. But, you know, or Jane Wyman had this issue with Ronald Reagan. So it was like really, it's a terrible situation to be in, especially when you're drinking and you're using that every day. You're lashing out at your husband, which is not great. It's not a good example for your daughter, who is seeing you do this. Dear Lord.
Yeah, and Lola, I mean, she kind of liked him. I mean, he treated her nicely, but he was not a very good father figure by any means. Mm-hmm. He was definitely not a good husband either. But, you know, he basically was, like, he was her funder, essentially. She, when she went to Italy, she, well, for her whole life, Linda had been a very charitable person. She was very heavily involved in the war effort. She volunteered at different charity organizations over her life, but mm-hmm. she was a very giving person, which is one thing that I really love about her. But, like, when she went to Italy to film, she filmed one film and then came back home and then did another one, both with Giuseppe Amato. She came into discovering this organization called Boys Town, which mm-hmm. was, like, kind of like Boys and Girls Club, but for Italy, if anyone knows, like, the U.S., organization of Boys and Girls Club. It was kind of like that, mm-hmm. But it was for, I think it was for orphaned boys living in
the city. Yeah, it was based on a movie, Boys Town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Linda really loved that cause a lot, and she wanted to do it, but with girls. So she wanted to start Girls Town, which is the exact same thing, but only for orphaned girls. And Phil Lieberman basically gave her the money to start it. And so she basically was one of the biggest, givers to that organization, and she was really proud of it. So things like that, I mean, she used his money not only for herself, but also for things that she really cared about, and which I think was interesting. And but, you know, their marriage was not doing too well, and Phil really wanted to save it. So they made plans to adopt an Italian girl, and they did. And but, you know, after they divorced, Linda didn't really, he had full custody of their daughter after they divorced. So that really didn't work out in their favor. But, you know, their marriage was just not very good by any means. Yeah.
So did Girls Town ever get off the ground, though?
It did. It, from what I remember, it was still pretty successful, and she was still really involved in it, and I think she became, like, one of the chairmen or something, but it did get off the ground because of Phil Liebman's money. It did work in the end, but, like, just the marriage between them just did not, so at this point, Linda was starting to kind of, she was, after Phil Lieberman and them divorced, she was trying to figure out something to do with her career. So back in, let me look at the date exactly. She started working on the stage in 1956, so this was after their divorce. She did her first play in Phoenix, Arizona, Room Full of Roses, and this was a really interesting time for Linda. She kind of wanted to, like, go out of the film industry because of her experience in Hollywood, and she kind of mm-hmm. wanted to move away from Hollywood. So she started out doing stage work, and she was doing pretty well. I mean, Room Full of Roses was the first one, and then over the years, she did plays like Teen Sympathy. She went on Broadway for a very short time, and she went all over the country and did plays, mm-hmm. and that was something that was interesting, that I, like, the fact that she, like, I mean, many actors, especially, like, ex-studio actors, went and did, like, stage work, and mm-hmm. Linda was one of them. She also was involved in television a lot. She went back to 20th Century Fox and did their 20th Century Fox, like, television hour, and she did several TV plays. She was featured in several TV shows. She guest starred in a lot of TV shows. So she was doing all kinds of work by that point.
Mm-hmm.
She was still doing movies, not with any studio in particular, but she was doing movies.
She was a freelancer, basically.
Yeah, and although she was doing a lot of work, financially she still wasn't doing too well and wouldn't really get back up on her feet for the rest of her life. But, like, she still continued to do her career. She was a very, like, hard working person. She always had to work. So for a couple years she'd been doing freelance work, essentially, and in the meantime she had met a pilot who was going to be her third husband, mm-hmm. Robbie Robertson. And their marriage at first was, like, you know, picture perfect. Mm-hmm. Like, Robbie Robertson was a very handsome, very older gentleman. Or not very older, but...
What is with her in older men?
I know.
I don't understand. Linda Darnell.
Yeah. And, you know, and so was Bill Leadman. They were both older than her. And she had... I think it just mainly had to do with the fact that she just needed some sort of older male figure in her life.
Of course.
She didn't have as a kid. And, you know, Robbie Robertson... someone referred to him as, like, a Greek Adonis. I mean, he was, like, super handsome, and just, it treated Linda like a person, which was something she hadn't had in a while because of Philemon. So, mm-hmm. she fell in love with him really fast. They got married, in 1957, and basically he helped her get back up on her feet. I mean, at this point, she was still drinking really heavily. Her mental health was not doing too well either.
Oh, baby.
Financially, she was not doing too well. But Rob Robertson, basically kind of tried to help her get back up on her feet. So he was one of the figures in her life that said, hey, we should try to do something different. Why don't we try to do, like casino shows? Why don't we try to do night shows, like nightclub shows? And Linda was not against the idea. She was a little, like, hesitant at first, but, you know, he was really, like, heavily involved in getting her into nightclub shows. He basically, she like, learned how to sing again. I mean, she sung early on in her career, but she kind of stopped.
Mm-hmm.
She learned how to sing again. She made up an act. She did scenes. She relearned scenes from some of her movies, and basically, together with another... man, he was a tenor, and from New York. I cannot remember his name for the life of me, but mm-hmm. they did a night show together, and they went all over the country. And mm-hmm. Like, Linda was doing pretty well, but as she got more and more into her alcoholism, the mm-hmm. more and more she became nervous. She became very angry. She didn't show up to rehearsals on time. She would, like, wake up in the afternoon, like, and just drink constantly, and she would go on stage. I mean, since she had been drinking for such a long time, she didn't really get, like, drunk, like, during shows or anything, but mm-hmm. she was heavily dependent on it.
She was using that as a crutch, basically. Oh, mm-hmm. God bless her soul.
Yeah.
I feel bad for her daughter, because I know I've read stories about how her daughter was, like, estranged from her at this point.
Yeah, and, like... Because, so Linda, whenever she would get drunk, she'd become very angry and very violent. Mm. And she, like, a couple times, she actually threatened to kill Lola. Like, it got to the point where she was just, the alcohol just really affected her horribly. And Lola had to, like, not live with her for a period of time. She lived with Pev. Who she'd been, like, partially... she had partial custody at this point. She just eventually went and lived with him for a while. And this hurt Linda a lot, too. I mean, her relationship with Lola was really rocky. And basically, she felt like her life was falling apart. And, you know, to make matters worse, as Linda became more and more, like, depressed, she became much more of a homebody. She did not like going out at all. She stayed in bed a lot of the time, and Robbie Robertson, I mean, unfortunately, this kind of is understandable, but he just kind of needed to do something else, so he had an affair with a woman. They went to Hawaii for, I think it was another nightclub show. They were in Hawaii together, and he started having an affair with a Yugoslavian actress, Linda found out from one of her friends who was with her at the time and said, hey, I just found these flowers that were charged to your account, but they were sent to someone else. So Robbie had been using the money to, like, get the flowers to this woman, and he had an affair with her.
Mm.
And Linda found out. She was crushed. She tried to take her life at this point. It was not very good at all. And then come to find out, he actually had impregnated this woman, and which really drove Linda to the edge. And she filed her divorce, and it was a very messy divorce battle. He would rebuttal Linda with, like, you know, charges of, like, not being a good wife, and then she would go back to, like, being adulterous and having numerous affairs over their relationship, and then just back and forth. But it was a very messy divorce that was officially finalized in 1963. Mm. But yeah, so Linda had to give up her home that she'd had for a while with Phil Lieberman. He built her a house in Bel Air that she was really proud of, but she, because she had divorced Robbie Robertson, her money was scarce. She had to sell the house. And Robbie actually, although he had treated her well, he was not very good with money. He would, he would take out money from one thing and then put it towards another. Like, basically, someone said it was like taking, like, borrowing from Peter to pay Paul. It was essentially, he would sell something of Linda's, but then buy something else to make her happy. And it was a very, he didn't really have a lot of money. He just knew how to, like, take some and then pay it off for something else. So he wasn't really doing well for Linda's financial problems either. But after the divorce, she sold the house that she bought with Phil Lieberman that she was really proud of and that she had for a long time, and then that was gone. And then she was going back to the theater by this point. She'd stopped doing nightclub shows after she divorced Robbie. She's going back to the theater. She started doing plays around the country. She still did some TV. So she was kind of, like, floundering in her later work, and then it came to the point where, in 1964, she was offered a movie role. She hadn't been in movies for 7 years at that point, she was actually kind of excited. She was looking forward to it, and so she did it. It was called Black Spurs, and that would be her last movie, in the meantime, after she'd filmed and everything, she went to Chicago to stay with her friend, Jean Curtis, who she had met back in 1948. And she became not only a close friend, but, like, she was really good at business. So she kind of became, like, a business partner with her. And, like, she was a really close person in her life. And she went to live with her in Chicago for a bit. I believe she was on route to do a new play, but she'd been staying with her for a few nights. On the night of April 9th, 1965, she had been staying up late with Jean and her daughter Patty. Lola was not there. She was actually in college by this point, so she was not there. But Linda stayed up really late. They watched Stardust together, which is very, like, ominous. They had drunk a lot of coffee, so they were up really late. Linda was already a night owl to begin with, so she was up, like, 2, 3 a.m. They don't know what cause this, but in the middle of the night, Patty, Jean Curtis's daughter, woke up, saw that there was a fire going on downstairs, and she woke up her mother, Jean, who then woke up Linda. And from what I remember, they couldn't go downstairs because the fire was going on. So Jean, Linda, and Patty went out one of the bedroom windows. Patty went first. She broke her ankle, I think. And then Jean was going to push out Linda. But Linda was afraid of jumping because her physical state was very fragile. And she didn't want to jump. So when Jean turned around to get Linda, Linda was gone, and they didn't know what happened to her. Turns out she tried to go downstairs, like, through the fire to get to the front door, but she passed out from the fumes, and so she was just unconscious. By this point, they had called the fire department, and Jean jumped out the window because she couldn't find Linda, and she couldn't go downstairs. So Jean told the fireman, hey, there's a woman in there. And they opened the door, found Linda on the ground, passed out. She was covered in burns, and they took her to the hospital. And she was staying in the hospital for a few days. Lola came back from college to stay with her mom. She was not doing well. She was in critical condition, and eventually they couldn't do anything else. And Linda passed away on April 10th, 1965, due to second, I think first and second degree burns all over her body.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and it was just, it was very sad because although she was not, like, her career wasn't looking too promising, she wasn't ready to die. I mean, she was not doing well, and she did have suicidal thoughts in the past, but it's just, it's heartbreaking to know that this happened, and it's also kind of frustrating because, like, yes, her death is very famous, and most people know her because of her death, and it's frustrating because people are like, oh, she died in a fire. Yeah, we know that. And
that's how some people just know her by, is the way that she died. It's not, they don't care about her career. They just cared about the way she died was the fire.
Yeah, and, like, I sometimes will get comments just out of nowhere saying, like, oh, she died in a house fire. I'm like, I know that. This has nothing to do with what I'm talking about. So thanks for telling me that. I'm fully aware of it. And that's why I try not to talk about her death too much, because so many people just know about it. I mean, it is a very important part to remembering her, because so many people know her from her death, but, like, it's sometimes just frustrating to know that that's, like, if not the only thing people know about her. So it's, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Bless her heart.
Yeah, she was definitely, I mean, people call her, like, a tragic figure, and, like, I totally agree with that. You know, there's so much to her, especially, like, her later life. I mean, the fact that she basically shot up really fast in Hollywood, and she got burnt out. I mean, that was bound to happen.
Jean Crane did, too, believe it or not.
And, you know, Hollywood, she wanted to move on from Hollywood because it had been such a, like, demanding part of her life, and 20th Century Fox was such a pain. I mean, she ended up, like, especially during her angry tirades to her friends in the 50s, she would call Daryl Zanuck a son of a bitch. I mean, she was really fed up with Hollywood by that point. She wrote to friends saying, like, I've got to get out of here. I cannot wait to leave Hollywood, and, like, yeah, she just wasn't. She wasn't happy with her life going by the end of her career in Hollywood. So, you know, being dropped was one of the best things that happened to her. But unfortunately, it ended too. It hurt her in the end. So
yeah, especially with her alcohol that she just drank till the day she died. Basically, you know, there was no such thing as AA then. There was
because apparently, like, in a letter to one of her friends, like, someone who was outwardly very concerned about her alcoholism, because there were several people in her life that was like, Linda, you really need to watch this. And Linda was very like, oh, I'll be fine. You know, I know that AA is a wonderful thing, and I'll go to it if I need to. She never did. But, you know, So she knew that it was a problem, but she didn't know how to fully cope with it. Because I think it just had to do with the fact that she never, like, grew up. I mean, she had to basically ditch her childhood and become an actress and be like this. It was a very demanding job, and it's just, starting out so young, she basically had no time to grow up. She just kind of had to just do it. And with that, I don't think she developed the right coping skills to deal with problems. I mean, she had been to therapy in the past, but it was very minimal, and she just did not have, I don't think she had the full maturity to understand how to cope with these issues. And having someone as influential as Peb Marley in her life, who introduced her to alcoholism, I feel like for her, it's like the only thing that she knew how to, like, do. It was the one thing she knew how to cope with. And so it really hurt her in the end.
Yeah, for sure. Well,
getting into really deep stuff, but
yeah. Well, thank you for all your information. It's unbelievable. I mean, it's just incredible to learn so. I learned so much more about Linda than I never knew, because when I started, I was like, I know little to nothing about Linda Darnell.
I was just afraid that I was going to forget something, because there's just so much to unpack of their life, and I was afraid I was going to, like, miss something.
Nope, you got it.
Yeah. But, like, I mean, hopefully, I mean, hopefully this, well, I was listening to your podcast with Shay yesterday, and she said something at the end that I totally agree with. The fact that you're doing this and allowing, like, voices that really don't have the opportunity to go on, like, any, or, like, to speak, like, in any other legit setting, it's very nice to have this podcast to just learn about these people and to have opportunities for people who don't have monopoly over, like, you know, being able to go on to, like, you know, insanely, like, elite, like, jobs or whatever to talk about the people that they've researched. But this podcast is helping so many people understand underrated actors.
Yeah, so. Well, thank you. You know, that was kind of the goal of this podcast, really. It was kind of like, let me pick people who people don't know. Like, yes, there's James Dean, there's Marilyn Monroe, there's Elizabeth Taylor. Yes, of course I could talk about those people, but most people know who those people are. If I mentioned to you who Linda Darnell is, most people would look at me funny and go, who's Linda Darnell? Exactly. Yeah. You need to know about this, one of these great bomb-ass women who really had, even though her alcoholism really did damage, she was really a cool person, and I will give her that.
Yeah, she was so much more than her film. I mean, she was not only a very charitable person, she was kind, she was funny, she was a very, very cool lady, and I think that most people don't really recognize that. So
exactly. So when I do these episodes, I usually pick people who don't really get to have their envelopes pushed. And Linda Darnell, I was actually thinking of you. And as soon as you tweeted at me, I was like, girl, I was ready to message you.
I was seeing all these, like, other people that I knew on Twitter being like, hey, like why don't you, like if you ever do a podcast on so-and-so, I'd be happy to talk. I'm like, you know what, let's go ahead and just petition Linda. Why not just get her voice out, get my voice and get her story out there? And
absolutely. And I was actually in the DMs ready to DM you when you tweeted me that, so I was actually ready to ask you.
I guess we're just on the same brainwave, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. This was such a joy for me, and it was such a bomb for me. I loved it.
Yes, I was so excited this week. I was just like, as soon as we got this going, I was just like, okay, I have to do my schoolwork, but I just cannot stop thinking about doing this podcast. And I was just so looking forward to doing this. So, like, thank you for, like, reaching out to me. Thank you for letting me do this, because this was such a fun opportunity.
Absolutely. I was so glad you reached out to me and was like, hey, if you ever want to do Linda. And I was like, sweetie, and I literally tweeted back at you. I was like, sweetie, check me in the DMs, because we are doing this. We are having Linda Darnell. And it was so funny. Ironically, I posted about it on Facebook, and I was like, I'm doing this podcast. If anybody wants to join, Jean Crane's granddaughter was like, definitely. And I'm like, ooh, yes. I would love to talk to her. I'm also going to be talking with Robert Cummings' daughter as well, and I cannot wait for that, because I love Robert Cummings, but that's a different episode. But long story short, I was like, if anybody wants to do an episode with me, please do, because I am ready to talk about these underrated people. I know Catherine Grayson's going to have an episode. I know Rudo Valentino's going to have an episode. Everybody's been asking me about the Deanna Durbin episode. It is coming, I promise.
I'm definitely looking forward to that. I know nothing about her, and I can't wait to learn all about her.
Yeah.
You know everything about Deanna Durbin.
So. I do, yeah. Well, anyway, thank you so much, and thank you for joining us on Movie Magic, and we will see you next time.
Thank you.